to another episode of Living Life Intently. I'm your host, Lee Frazier, and I'm joined each and every week by my good pal, Jonathan Canary, unless he dies on a hike somewhere, which I really hope that's the way it goes for him. But, you know, luckily for us, he's still alive and kicking and co-hosting these podcasts. I'm going to break the news to you right now that this is one of the last three episodes of this season. It's coming in the spring, getting ready for the spring and summer mayhem, chaos, the absolute shit show that is a Cape Breton tourism season. You just kind of hold on with white knuckles. It is fun, but it flies by. So we're going to be getting the campground ready, getting all the stuff online, all that sort of stuff. And I've been actually slacking on my end of getting all the new stuff up on the website. But what I did get up there, I snuck up there a couple weeks ago, was the camping gear rental. So we're bringing those back this year. So for those of you that don't know, that's how we started the business. We were going to rent camping gear and packages and sell tours and stuff. But, you know, you just evolve and pivot. And now we do tours, have a campground. And now are bringing back the camping gear rental. So right now it's just single items, tents, sleeping bags, that sort of stuff. There's a couple packages for like tent, sleeping bag combos. You can check it out on our website under gear rentals. But other than that, we're just going to jump into this podcast. We head up to Halifax last week to record a bunch of episodes that will be our final episodes of the season. Some of them needed to get postponed and rescheduled. So Noah from Northern Scavenger, we're going to do a podcast at some point whenever I track him down. Weekends are when he's out paddling. They were actually hitting a river last weekend, so we weren't able to line up a date. So that podcast is going to get delayed a little bit. However, this week is with Mariah Kearney. She runs My Home Apparel in Truro. I've known her for years. We've done a collaboration t-shirt last year to celebrate the spring and summer season, which did really well. And I love seeing that shirt on people when I'm, you know, just up in the park or doing trails or whatever. It's pretty hilarious to walk around a corner and then you see your t-shirt. But we sat down with Mariah, talked about how she got her start, a couple trips she's done over the years, and just talked about her business and how she's pivoting into something new and diversifying what she does. Anyways, I won't blabber on too long, but that's it. I'll check you all next week. Peace. So we are in Truro. I'm here with Jonathan Canary. My name is Lee Frazier. As you all know from listening to this podcast, if you've listened to it before, and we're here, Mariah, who owns My Home Apparel. And I'm going to butcher the other name again because I can't remember.
My Home Mercantile.
Mercantile.
That's right.
Right?
Correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we parked about a kilometer down the road and Canary had to hike his gear.
You think I'd be used to hiking gear for a kilometer or two?
You'd think,
right?
You'd think, yeah. You'd think.
We're getting a road case next season.
Yeah. We saw this, there was a guy coming out of the breakfast spot this morning and, it's just like, he had these two walkers and I'm not making fun of it. I was just looking at him and I was like, Canary, that looks like you when you get off the Highlands.
That's right.
Yeah. His feet blistered.
10 out of 10 would do again.
So Mariah, why don't you start it off and tell people who you are, where we're at and what's going on?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, we're in Truro. We're at the My Home Apparel and My Home Mercantile headquarters, our flagship location. So we have this store here, and then we also have another one in Moncton, New Brunswick, right downtown on Main Street. But here is sort of where all the magic happens, where all this main sort of staff work out of this building. Mm-hmm. It's where we ship all the orders all over the world. It's where we receive all our stock and get it all ready on for the website. And it's obviously where we sell most of our clothing.
There you go. And you guys started at a different location, though, because I remember coming here years ago. Well, not at this location, but I remember coming to Truro. It was up the street, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was above, right across from Bike Monkey. In what's in there now? There's like a
Thai place.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought, okay. I thought it was like an outdoor store there. Interesting.
No, we were looking at the grow and brew.
Oh,
the brew
yeah.
and grow.
Yeah.
They cornered the market.
Yeah, it's a booming right? business.
Yeah, and you guys, when did you start? What year did you guys start?
So I actually started My Home Apparel in 2015, and I started it in my house, and then I moved into actually this building because my mom used to own it.
Okay.
And so I moved into this building, into the basement, and I had like a tiny little square footage in there. Mm-hmm. And then I moved upstairs to the third floor, and I had 200 square feet that I could sort of sell my stuff out of and had a little desk. And then I eventually moved across the street to that other building that I just rented for a few years.
Okay, yeah.
And then I bought this building 4 years ago.
Whoa.
And yeah, moved everything here.
Cool.
So it's almost 7 years old.
Are the paintings on the way down the basement like legacy from other businesses?
Yeah. So this building, my mom's business was Seashell Design.
Okay.
And she had like Seashell Under the Sea. So yeah. That's where the she had stuff in the basement. Yeah. So that's why. And I'm never covering them. They're like
the Seashell Speakeasy.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
Actually, that'd be very good use of that space.
What was the password?
Yeah. Well, I can't share that yet.
Secret. Cool.
And what was the inspiration behind starting? It was My Home Apparel started first, and then you moved in here and then started the Mercantile, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the inspiration, it sort of fell into my lap. Before I had My Home Apparel, I had a jewelry business. And I used to travel all over the world and buy jewelry and then come back and sell it. So I did it at festivals and events.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. I was actually a teacher before. So I used to go on my March break when I was a teacher. And then I'd spent all summer with... at every festival and event I could possibly be at and sell my jewelry. I had two kids during that process. I'd have them strapped to my back and I'd be selling stuff anywhere I could. I lived in Alberta at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I already had a little taste of retail and what the industry was. And very quickly I realized that I was making more money doing that in the summer than I was teaching. And I enjoyed the independence more.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the travel part of it. I used to go to India mostly. And so I, decided to go in full time, and I, you know, sort of built up this website. I actually took a business partner and built up the jewelry business. We were sold all over the country, did very, very well. But I decided I wanted to pull it back into a Canadian business, Canadian made, socially responsible company. Mm-hmm. And so I sold my half of the jewelry company and had this idea for the home logo in that period of time.
Yep.
And so first it was just the Nova Scotia logo. And actually, to be honest, my first idea was to stamp it on jewelry because that's what I was doing at the time. But I wanted to do like made in Canada jewelry that was, told your story. That was my whole focus. And I was actually gonna, like inspired by your story. I was going to create this whole new line of Canadian made jewelry. Mm-hmm. So when I showed it to my sister, the logo, she was like, she was living away at the time. And she was like, I love it. I would like it on a t-shirt, not on a piece of jewelry. And so I printed it at Fundy Textiles. I printed one gray t-shirt and took a picture of myself, terrible photo, and put it on the internet. And it just kind of exploded, to be honest. People started pre-ordering them. And I thought, okay, well now I'm going to print 24 and 36 and then like hundreds, and they were all selling out. And so I trademarked the logos very quickly and I added more logos in and decided like how exactly, because it took off so fast, I didn't really have a chance to figure out what my direction was going to be. Mm-hmm. And so then I decided, well, it's a give back socially responsible company. So the 5% of the profits go back to ending homelessness in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so we celebrate where you call home while working to give all Canadians a home. So I spent $15,000 and started the company, and I basically packed, I had, I think, 20 Tupperwares of t-shirts, and I flew to Fort McMurray.
Classic.
And I worked my way all the way back, and I just sold them basically like
cool
anywhere I could. Yeah. And so that's how it started 7 years ago.
Really organic.
Really very startup. Did I ever aspire to have a t-shirt company? Absolutely not. Just sort of happened.
That's great.
Yeah. And then you were based at West in Fort Mac. When did you move back east?
I moved back here 12 years ago or 11 years ago when I was 30.
So the business is quite a bit old, eh? You've been around for a while.
Yeah. Well, like here.
Older than I thought.
Yeah. So I started as an entrepreneur when I was like 25. Mm-hmm. But sort of built it up.
Yeah.
And then like sold that business when I was 32 and then basically started into my home apparel, or sold the other business when I was 33 and then started into my home apparel at that same time. So I've been doing this for 7 years, but I have really been an entrepreneur for longer. It just took real small steps to get to where I wanted to be and to what I wanted to do. And I've really, like, I grew up in an entrepreneurial household, so I've been doing this, it feels like, my entire life.
Yeah. When did you hire your first employee?
I hired my first employee pretty early on because I thought she needed me.
Oh, no. To everybody listening, we're in the shop upstairs.
She was slow, so I thought that she needed me.
I was going to say, you don't have to creep around. We won't hear that on the mic.
Yeah, no, but it's all good. And even if we hear it, that's okay. You know. Yes.
So for everybody listening...
We're in a shop, so
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. If we're listening...
We
can cut it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the question? When
got distracted?
Yes, something about
when did you hire your first employee?
My first employee, yes, pretty early on because I did pop-ups right away. So I did like Micmac Mall kiosks, every possible craft show. I used to do like 50 craft shows a year.
Wow!
I used to be everywhere and anywhere in it. Seriously, anywhere in Canada that I could go, from BC to Newfoundland, I flew and set up. And so I had to have an employee pretty early on that helped me with that. And so I think I hired my first, like, my home apparel employee, like, right out of the gate. And she helped me do all the craft shows and pack online orders. And then organically, like, added another person. Like, I had to have a graphics person because we were just, like, churning out designs all the time. And then I had to hire, once I had the store, I had to have shop staff and so on and so forth.
Wow. Cool. Crazy.
I think... I'm like having a little flashback right now. I think I interviewed you on the side of the road once for a tourism thing, right?
Yeah.
No shit.
You and your son.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do remember that. Cool.
What was this?
I just have one of those little things where it, like, you know, it's scraped from the deep brain.
Yes.
And it gets put together and, you know.
I was thinking when you're telling the story about the festivals, I was like, uh-oh. Maybe I saw you at a festival. Please. We did not meet at a festival. And I'm looking over at Johnny. I was like, yeah, I hope she didn't see us at some of the festivals we went to.
Didn't see these guys.
No.
Not these guys in front of you.
So it wasn't like Evolve and Future Force type festivals.
We did Evolve.
No shit.
Wow.
Yeah.
What year was that?
Oh, well, actually, as my home apparel, I definitely did not do Evolve.
But the jewelry.
With the jewelry business.
Oh, man. You were
every year,
probably
I think.
Sold a lot there.
Yeah.
Was it in Antigonish, the old place?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yep. Been there.
Yep. Skip over that one. Let's not tell those stories.
You guys have worked on some projects together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I reached out to Mariah. I can't remember how it started. And I think it was like the first year maybe. And I think I was looking for, I think it was because I was looking for cushions or tote bags. I can't remember because as somebody, I think Lindsay McMullen, who was doing some photography work at the time, down in Cape Breton for us. And she had did this calligraphy drawing of Halifax, Dartmouth and stuff. And she was getting stuff done and she did one of Cape Breton for us. And then I think it was something about pillows or tote bags. And that's how we linked up. And then when we were looking at trying to find a local company to print, or a local company manufacture stuff, because I knew you guys were working with Stanfield. So I was kind of curious about that. And that's kind of when we linked up. It was at our old place too. Because I remember walking upstairs and you guys had the press and you're doing screen printing all the shirts, which used to be here, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys not do that in house anymore?
No, we don't.
Oh.
That was a COVID shift.
That's probably a relief, isn't it?
Yeah, well, silk screening is a wonderful thing and it's very creative, but it has to operate like a factory. So you have to be turning shirts 24/7. And so when like the pandemic hit, I had to get rid of some of the employees because I didn't know what was happening. And the silk screening side of it was 4 full-time people. So I had to, and actually at the same time, employees were starting to look in different directions. Like my graphic designer wanted to do freelance and like it was everything sort of shifting in that direction anyway, that I was going to have to make some changes.
Yeah.
And so I just decided okay, I'm not going to do this full time. And so I started printing just on my own whenever we needed it or for custom things. And then it just was like, I think it's not the best use of my time.
Yeah.
So then I just started contracting out. And as we know, it's like Stanfields does it and they're right there. So there's not really any point in me having four people working when they can carry the weight of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was your, what was the kind of one of the biggest challenges when you were starting out the business? Was it outsourcing to find, constantly have this revolving designs kind of coming in and coming out? And, you know, was that a big challenge or was it more or less trying to find places to print the product or decent product to use? Like Stanfields does a great product, but you obviously use places other than Stanfields to supply your stuff.
Yeah. So there's definitely the roadblocks that, as you know, Made in Canada offers. It's like very limited what you can get. You're very limited in styles. You're very limited in what you can provide your customers, which makes it very difficult in a competitive market because I can't offer the latest trends and what's super fashionable. And because they don't have that, it's not the way that, you know, Canadian factories operate. Mm-hmm. They have like their line. We make black hoodies, we make gray hoodies, and we do blue t-shirts. And it's like very, very limiting. So that's been a huge roadblock.
Yeah.
And is constantly causing concern just because if you want to get really creative, you have to make huge purchases. And it's really difficult as a small business to say, yep, I want, you know, 10,000 of something, which is, you know, what you have to be able to be prepared to do is to get thousands of something. Mm-hmm. And also another big roadblock is just, you know, it's a very competitive market. I mean, there's one thing about being in the East Coast, and I sort of came into it at a time that there's a lot of other East Coast companies on the rise, which was fine. Everyone's sort of in their lane and doing their thing, but it's competitive across the country.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Canadian companies. There's a lot of Canadian made companies and it's hard to differentiate yourself and like stay relevant. And the online world's very saturated. Social media is changing by the literal second.
Yeah.
So like these are the constant roadblocks that we face. And so I just have to keep doubling down on like why we do what we do and just like stay focused on that. But those have been probably the bigger or the biggest issues is designing, creating product, staying relevant and facing the challenges of competitiveness.
Yeah. It's kind of hard because last year I was kind of taking a different approach to doing design work because for years we just used the same designs over and over and over again. And so I approached a couple of people last year and I said, I need to be able to have constant ideas coming up. Whether or not I'll use every one of those ideas, I don't know, but I approached a couple designers that we had worked with here and there. And I just said, listen, let's try a trial run where I'll put you on a retainer. I just want four designs a month and we'll go for like 3 months. And it could be a sketch. It could be like, if you're working on another project for a client and that doesn't work and you think it might work for us, like anything. And then I'll pay you your full fee to flush out that idea. I just want to have a constant influx of stuff. Cause before then I was kind of pretty much just doing it myself. If I had time, I'd jump on Illustrator and I'd mess around or, you know, look at stuff we've done in the past and try to do something a little bit different. And, that was just very time consuming. So I kind of wanted to put that off on somebody else. And it did work out because we ended up with the new one that we ran last year. One of those was actually the shirt that we did, Highlands Are Calling shirt that we put out last year.
That's one of my favorite items of clothing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny to see it on like, I'd be like literally driving the Cabot Trail and I'd see somebody with the shirt on. Like I was on a trail and I saw three people with the shirt on the same trail.
Yeah.
Yes, we were doing the Skyline last summer and literally the person was on the Skyline Trail with the shirt on and I was like, oh my goodness. Like, and then he was so like, wow, you guys made this, that he went and positioned himself on the Cabot Trail where that photo was taken and then like took a photo of himself.
I remember that. Yeah.
Wow. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that project, that trial run worked really well, but like for us, that's a very secondary part of the business, a very small side of the business. It's just something to have extra. I look at it as like a marketing expense. Even though I would like to do it, and that's how we actually started like 10 years ago, was as like hawking t-shirts to pay for us to be able to do run a blog. And then it just kind of evolved, but now it's something like I've reached out to you recently about looking to shopping in Canada. And that was the biggest thing, like talking to you and a couple other people that I called that are in this industry. And I thought about, you know, expanding that side of the business a little bit more. And the more I researched it, the more roadblocks I found within Canada, because I wanted certain things, and those certain things, especially now with supply chain issues, it's like our people that we used to get our hats done with are not doing, they just refuse to do our stuff now. But they're like, here's our wholesaler. You can buy wholesale and do it all yourself. I'm like, right. Well, what's the point? I'm trying to run a tourism business.
Right.
I'm not trying to buy patches from one company and then assemble them on hats from another company in like my basement.
Yep.
Like, that's not what I want to do.
Yep.
So that's been a kind of a big roadblock. So everything's got put on the back burner for us as far as that thing. But I do enjoy seeing other companies make it through that highly competitive market and actually stay around for more than, you know, a year or two, because there's been a lot of those.
Yeah.
I could name probably like 15 off right at the top of my head that were all around the same time. But you guys stayed the course, and East Coast Lifestyle stayed the course, and then Sawyer stayed the course with Country Liberty and stuff. And I'm just happy to know everybody that's been involved with those.
Yeah, it's been a good ride.
But I wanted to ask you about, before I guess we get into talking about more business stuff, I mentioned to him that you had done Everest Base Camp.
Mm-hmm.
When was that? Was that during while you're running this business, or was it pre-business?
That was 12 years ago, just before I had my first son. It was always a bucket list thing I wanted to do. Sort of backtracking to that, like when I graduated high school, I deferred my university acceptance and I packed a bag and I moved to the Middle East and I worked and I traveled all around like the Middle East, Northern Africa and Europe for a year. No experience, no idea what I was doing. And in that time, I met people that had traveled around and seen different parts of the world. And I mean, I grew up in the country, probably similar to you guys, like 300 people. It was like a whole new world had been opened to me. And I'd hardly traveled as a kid. I really hadn't been anywhere internationally. So I decided at that time, like, I'm just going to travel as much as I can while I'm young. And so then I went to university and I took my third year of university and I went to Australia for the year, but I also like got to travel all over Asia and New Zealand. And in that time, I met people who had done Everest Base Camp. And I was like, I'm going to do that one day. And so then after I graduated university, I took a year off and we traveled from New York City all the way to Brazil, all the way down through, and spent 2 months in Patagonia, trekking all through there. Amazing. Unbelievable. And we also did like Peru, and we did, you know, trekking in Bolivia, lots of hiking, absolutely no money. So when we were like backcountry or hiking, we didn't have technical gear. Like we absolutely did not. Like I think we bought a tent in Bolivia for $30. That tent took us for 7 months, like through Patagonia. Definitely didn't, I'm sure we had hiking boots, maybe just sneakers.
Flip flops.
Yeah. Like we didn't have all this like super technical gear, like absolutely not.
Yeah.
And then took us all through Africa and home, slept in a tent everywhere. And then we got back and we worked for a couple years saving up again. And then we flew to Nepal. And again, no technical gear. We bought some stuff in Kathmandu, which is all like knockoff North Face gear. Rented some tents that they claimed were minus 40. Definitely were not. didn't hire a guide. Didn't hire a Sherpa. Carried our own gear. Each pack was 60 pounds. And we didn't fly in. We actually walked in. So we did an additional 9 days till we even got to like the starting point of Tulukla, which is where most people fly to. And then they do the 2 week trek. So we actually walked in 9 days, and got in insane shape because we didn't train. I didn't even walk on a treadmill before I went. I just went. Like I didn't know. I think I was like blind to like what people actually do. It was very tough. Like, I'm telling you, like you get up at 6 a.m, you eat your porridge. Like they basically just serve you potatoes and like various forms.
kind of like my weekly breakfast.
And then we'd walk for 9 hours and then we'd get there and like to the next sort of, the Sherpas would have accommodations set up along the way and you just find one and stay. And, but it'd be, they don't have heat, right? So you'd have to be in bed by six because it'd be freezing after that. So you'd just be like laying in your sleeping bag. You wake up in the morning, your bucket of water beside you is frozen, start again. And we just did that until we got to Lukla, which was where most of the travelers started from, met up with people and sort of figured out our route. And then we just kept walking, until we got to Everest Base Camp, which was, I think from that point, 7 or 8 days.
Wow.
So at that point we were walking about 17 days by the time we got to base camp. And these are like 9 hour days, like crazy, with no technical gear, no experience, no guides, no Sherpa. Most people have Sherpas or guides with them.
Yeah. I think most people think you have to have, Sherpas or guides with you. That's from when I talk to people about it. They're like, oh yeah, you got it. Well, I mean, as a foreigner going into a different land, I mean, there's like this, it might seem like a daunting task, but I mean, you guys did it. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's probably difficult. You probably had blisters on your feet from wearing those flip-flops for 2 weeks.
Had blisters on our feet, freezing cold. But then we got to base camp, which was unbelievable. And that's when I realized that people that trek and hike, like actually hike Everest, are a different breed of people because it is so hard to hike to Everest Base Camp. That you know you're at 50% oxygen when you wake up in the morning and climb up to watch the sunrise over Everest. So it's like nothing I've ever experienced. Like it's physically very, very difficult. The people that climb Mount Everest, they have something different in their brain that like pushes them to that limit of like, you know, 10, 20% oxygen, unbelievably cold. The elements are insane. And you see like teams of people. Like we were actually trekking at the beginning of Everest trekking season, which is getting close to now.
Yeah.
And we'd see teams like Team Korea trekking in with all their gear. There was even a Starbucks up at.
No shit.
Yeah. Like not an actual, like, like a tent up there that they actually like build this. There's nothing there. And then they like create a mini city at Everest Base Camp. Not that we went to it because it's just for people that are trekking, but it's insane. And you think, wow, like it is unbelievable that people actually climb that mountain. And the Sherpas, some of them do it 9, 10 times. Like and when a Canadian or an international person does it, it's huge. It's unbelievable accomplishment in their life. But there are many local people who do it many, many times without oxygen.
I think that's what a lot of the theme of that documentary that just came out, the 14 Peaks. I don't know if you watched that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that was a lot of that theme was because of that. Cause those guys are from there and just wanting to put it on the map, like Nepal on the map for like the ability that the actual Sherpas and the people that live there do. Like that was the whole kind of point of that challenge. Well, that's what I took out of it. I think that was a big theme within that documentary. So if anybody listening, if you didn't watch that documentary, I'd highly recommend it. It was basically, what they did was absolutely crazy. So
it is crazy. And when you're there, you think, I don't even know how people do this really. And the Sherpas, like I have to also say, like it's an ethical conversation that I won't necessarily get into, but they are hauling gear on their backs that is like 100 pounds. And Sherpas, like Nepalese, are very small people. And so they're like carrying basically their weight on their back of like tourists things up a mountain.
Yeah.
And so it just didn't feel right to me, but, lots of people do it. It's fine. And it is their livelihood. It's how they make their money. So that's why it's a very ethical conversation. But when we got back down, it was like a huge accomplishment that we had done it. We stunk like you would not even imagine because we did not shower for 3.5 weeks.
Oh, I can imagine.
We did not eat anything other than porridge for like 3.5 weeks. So we got down and like had the greatest hot shower of our lives. And then like, we were like, we need
the best poop.
Yes. Yes. And the best burger or something. It was like, and you know, we had shredded so much weight and we were just like, give us all the food, all the beer, like everything that we could possibly have. Yeah.
How old were you?
Well, that was 12 years, 28.
Wow.
When I did it. Yeah.
Cool. Still invincible. Still made of rubber.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's the progression. I mean, nobody gets to doesn't do anything and then goes to Everest Base Camp. So there's a thing within people that once you start pushing your limits, it's like leveling. That's how I think of it. It's like leveling up. I've always just thought of it as like a video game where you beat a boss and you keep leveling up. That's how I've always thought of things. It's like we beat this boss. For instance, like some of the people that joined us on the Highlands trip, like that was the most difficult thing that they've done to date. But now that they're on a different level, now they're on a different plane. So they know that they can do it. They can register that in their brains that they can physically do this task. They can put themselves in that element. So then you go, okay, what's next? It's a never ending. It's like personal growth. It's a never ending battle. Everybody's got their direction. Everybody's got their upper limits and lower limits and stuff. But I think it's just like an innate like thing within us as human beings to constantly push. And those people that do Everest and do a lot of those mountaineerings are kind of another level than they anybody are. Else.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of people when we were there that they were like, you know, our next trek is we're going to Pakistan or we're going to these other big peaks in the world. I never had that aspiration. I just wanted to do this. Like, I'm not a mountaineer. I'm not like a big, I enjoy the outdoors, but I was like, I'm not gearing up to go conquer another big mountain next.
Oh, that's not how my brain works. My brain is like, oh, okay, you can do this? Okay, well, what can we add to this to make it even crazier? Let's do something a little bit. Because it's a never-ending... I think we talked about it last week on the podcast.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, with Kevin. But yeah, it's like a never-ending battle, internal struggle for me. It's I'm never content with just how it is or doing one thing. So it's the same deal with in business. Like, you can apply that mentality to anything within business. Like, if you dropped yourself 10 years ago into the position you're in now, your head would probably explode. But you now are like, I can handle this. I can deal with it. It's like, I had a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday, and he's like, I don't know how you're doing what you're doing. Like, two renovations, starting a business, or running, getting a business ready for the summer, doing all your social media marketing, doing all of that stuff. Like, listen, I've been doing it for so long that I just put things in place that I know that I can do this if I hit those key points. Like, I put things in place to make the streamline my entire process so that I can get to the end point, the end goal.
Yeah.
So I just work my way back.
And entrepreneurs have a different thing in their brain as well. Like, I, you know, you say like you're chasing the next thing, like you know, you get a comfortable place in your business and other people would be like, yeah, okay, like I'm just going to ride this. Mm-hmm. But there's like a different thing that you're like, no, what's next? The next thing. And I also have that. And I wish sometimes I didn't, because I yep. could just ride comfortably in my life and probably coast through. Like, my mom was an entrepreneur like that. She was like she got to a space and she was like, I'm just happy here. And she rode that for 25 years. And I never understood, like, why don't you want to grow? Like, do X, Y, and Z. But there's just something wired in many entrepreneurs that just, you know, want to keep going, and risk doesn't register the same as it does for other people. Like, you see something and you're like, it's just a small barrier. You keep going, right?
I think sometimes, like, there's also risk in staying put, mm-hmm. you know, because things age out. And if you're not staying in tune and staying in touch with your client base or your market, and you're not growing and you just stay where you are comfortable, well, there's a chance that your market will move on past you.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
well, so. You look at like a lot of tourism operators in recent years, like the older classic tourism operators were having a really hard struggle when I first started, because that was on the rise. Like, social media was really just starting to kick off here in Atlantic Canada. And it was a big point where we leaned into, whereas other people were didn't think it affected their business much. There's that. And then also the rise of Airbnbs and all this sort of stuff, and not changing with the times. And a lot of those people are not, you know, they had a struggle over the last couple of years, whereas the people that did, you know, lean into those things are now still thriving. Mm-hmm. Or they've sold their business to somebody else that's come in and taken their business, which is pretty much essentially what it was, rebranded it, and then now they're successful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. What else you got coming up for the summer? What do you got going on that you're excited about?
Yeah. Well, I'm really just hoping things go back to quote unquote normal. That would be what I'm really looking forward to, with people traveling.
My mind, we're here now.
Yes.
In my mind, we're here.
Yes. I just want people to be traveling and on the move again, because that's obviously very good for business. Two ways is, I want tourists to come to my shop. I want people to local people. And when I say local, like Maritimers, comfortable traveling around and visiting. And then I want people to come home, because that's a big part of my market, is people that come home from all over and they want a piece of home when they go back with them.
Yep.
So I'm really looking forward to a really great summer where things are a little bit quote unquote normal, where people are more comfortable to move around and we see more people out and about. And I am working on new business ventures, so I'm looking forward to...
Ooh, you got any new product drops you want to sneak out on this one?
I'm getting out of clothing. I'm going to stay in my home apparel and my home mercantile. I'm going to keep owning the companies, but I'm hoping to diversify my portfolio a little bit and do a little land development.
Big business words.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a key. I think it needed. I mean, you kind of get, we're talking about being stagnant, and there's only so much and so far you can go within certain industries too, and trying to keep it fresh. But also, like, I think this last pandemic pandemic that we're kind of still in has really brought people, or made people aware that they've got to diversify their income a little bit. Because that, like, a lot of stuff within rural, what I saw in rural Cape Breton through this whole last couple of years, and it really brought it to light. So people that were dependent on one source of revenue, tourism, well, that got sliced quite a bit for most people.
Yep.
So diversifying is definitely a wise decision, I would say.
It's pretty hard to get really wealthy. And I'm not even saying really wealthy, just wealthy and comfortable in retirement. with retail. It just is, like, unless you have many locations, or I was lucky I had viral product, but unless I continue to just keep hammering out, I need to have another game plan, because I'm not getting younger, I'm not old, but I mean, I'm like, got to think about my future for my kids. And so I decided what's something I could do that's totally different and perhaps a little more reliable than retail.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, if the current real estate in Western Cape Breton Island is any sight unstable, man, oh man, that place is like crazy. Like Margaree, Inverness, Shady Camp, that area, crazy. It's kind of like the Halifax housing market, where people are like bidding over asking the day it gets put up. It's crazy. And bidding on like plots of land that are like just enough to put like a trailer on.
I'm still counting on Lee's father to just will me a piece of land. Like, here you go.
You never know. You play your cards right. You never, never know.
Yeah, I'll just keep putting that bug in David's ear, right? You think it's time?
It's time, buddy. I gotta change that so it trails off.
Well, you can see you can
change it.
It's on a different audio clip, so you can fade it off. Yes. In post, right?
No. You can yes.
Yeah.
But you can set it within this device so that you press it fades off.
Oh.
Anyways.
I don't know if we'll put this in, but I think you'll probably forget to edit this in, but it's claps. It's a clap button, but anyway. Rapid fire.
Okay.
The look on your face. Pie or cake?
Oh, cake for sure.
Yeah, what kind of cake?
Chocolate cake. Any type of chocolate cake.
Fair. Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Mm-hmm. Do you take anything in it?
Milk.
Okay. Chips. Favorite chips?
Plain.
What?
Lightly salted.
No.
I'm basically an old lady.
I know. Hey, everybody looks at me weird when I don't do lightly. I do plain, straight up. Like the co-op ruffled back in the day. Now it's compliments ruffled.
I'm in for it. Love it.
I only eat one kind of chips. You want to know what kind?
Barbecue.
Oh, what? No.
Baked, old Dutch baked creamy dill.
You should have seen.
Oh my God.
I do love baked creamy dill.
They are mental.
You should have
put
seen
that right on a salad. I just make a salad and then crunch a whole bag up and put it right on top. What's your favorite time of year?
Summer.
Yeah, right. Favorite movie?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say that I don't watch a lot of TV or movies, but my favorite movie of all time is Old Yeller.
Oh, that's an old one. Okay, so we know you like to get outside. Do you have a favorite waterfall?
Victoria Park, Joseph Howe Waterfall. Of course, everybody needs to go to Victoria Park in Truro.
If you were an animal, what animal would you be?
I would be a elephant.
Yeah, why?
Because they always find their way home.
Oh. Ooh. Oh. Tied it nicely.
I met an elephant once and it was super nice to me. really, I met a real elephant once and it was like really, really cool.
Oh, I thought there was more story to that.
No, I was just in Thailand roaming around and we came upon an elephant and it was super chill. It was like petting us with its trunk.
And like it's a matriarchal society, so it's the females that lead the pack.
Cool.
It resonates with me.
You know, if an elephant touches you first, it accepts you.
Oh.
That's what they say.
There you go.
That's what the Thai say.
Okay.
Okay, last one. If you are what you eat, what are you?
I am, oh man, I am a loaded baked potato.
Whoa.
with bacon bits?
Yes, sour cream, cheese.
Cheese.
Just like comfort, just delicious. Mm-hmm. Everyone likes them.
Yeah. I'm on the other end of the comfort spectrum. I am cookie dough ice cream.
Oh, why?
Oh, because I definitely eat enough of it to then become part.
And creamy dill chips.
Creamy dill chips.
He would show up at my place and he'd buy like two tubs of ice cream and like four bags of baby dill and they would be gone by the morning.
Yeah.
Gone.
It's all right.
Yeah. Sounds like it. What about you, Lee? What would you be?
What animal would you be, Lee?
What animal would I be?
Yeah.
I don't know. I never thought of that. I don't know. I mean, the young kid in me, the very stereotypical kid, is going to say a wolf. That's me. I also wanted to be an assassin when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to
be. I can actually see you as both of those things, oddly.
That's great. Yeah.
I think I could see you as like a really perturbed owl.
It's like the picture you take me, and our friend Jimmy Peterson was a wildlife photographer and shot this picture of an owl, and it's like a great horned owl.
Yeah.
And you did a meme on
he looks really pissed off and he's staring off and then he looks at the camera and he's like I said I made a meme out of it, and it's like Lee sitting around the burner waiting for people to come out and get their boiled water
and coffee. Because I was like, I'd get up. So when we're doing the Highlands trip, I'd get up, be the first thing in the morning, and you get ready to boil water. And I'd be like yelling at people. I'm like, the water's boiling. It's boiling.
You'd be there
now
for an hour and a half waiting for people to come out of their tents. He's like shaking, still boiling water. And you walk up to the kitchen area that we dug out, and he's like, just shoots you the look. Just side like, eye.
Get your coffee now or you're not getting it.
All right. Well, that's it for the rapid fire. Do you have anything else you want to tell our listeners?
Just follow on our journey. Social media, My Home Apparel, My Home Mercantile. We're on all the channels.
Your
I all have websites.
Great.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I don't do it myself, so I can't take credit for it, but the team that does it, they do a good job.
Good job, team.
Yeah.
Great job, team.
All right. Well, that's it.
Roger that. Okay. Well, we are off to Halifax. Thanks for jumping on. Appreciate
it. Us. Yeah.
Awesome.
Live Life Intense and all the social channels. And Dickie Boo over there is at Sounds of Fire.
That's it.
See ya.